9 p.m. by Longines, the world's most honored watch, product of the Longines Whitnor Watch Company.
Mutual presents Leave It to the Girl. Good evening. This is Andre Baruch inviting you to join us in the fastest half hour in radio. 30 minutes of rapid-fire entertainment with five of the most glamorous and successful girls in America. Paula Stone, Madge Evans, Robin Chandler, Eloise McElhone, and our girl of the week is the famous star of stage and screen, Glenda Farrell. Facing this round table of romance is the well-known foreign correspondent and roving editor, author of the new bestseller, The Case Against the Admirals, William Bradford Huey. And now to get on with the show, here is the girl who asked the questions, the charming young star of stage, screen, and radio, co-producer of the Broadway hit The Red Mill, Paula Stone.
Thank you, Andre Baruch, and hello, everybody. Our first question tonight comes to us from El Mario Court of Los Angeles, California. And here's what El Mario Court has to say to you gals. Last week, I read an article entitled, Let Him Be Lord and Master. Well, now the author claims that a woman likes to be pushed around. Before I take the writer's advice, I would like to know if you girls approve of this theory. Is it right or is it wrong? Robin, what would you say?
Well, I don't think anybody likes to be pushed around, a man or a woman. But I think that a man likes to feel as though he's sort of at the helm in a home, and I think a woman should give him all of that responsibility.
I see. And what would you say, Glenda?
Well, did you hear about the girl that let the man push her around until he had her right where she wanted to be?
I think you have something there. Madge, what do you say?
Well, I think that article was probably written by a man, and a man who's scared to even say hello to a woman. And if that title, Let Him Be Lord and Master, isn't wishful thinking, then I don't know what wishful thinking is.
Yes.
If that young man is going to take that advice seriously, I'd like to add a little advice. And that's, brother, you be prepared to run.
Well, as a matter of fact, I don't agree with you, Madge, in one respect. I think that the article was written by a woman, and probably the original title was, Let Him Be Lord and Master, the Poor Deluded Creature, you see, unquote. But due to the lack of space, they cut out that last half, you see, and let the man think he was lord and master. Eloise?
Oh, I think the idea is absolutely wrong. And I must say, I think it was written by a man, too, because they're the only ones who have ideas like that. The only time a girl likes to be pushed is into matrimony or a mink coat.
Yes, Bill?
Apparently, these women have been pushed. But I think that there's only one time when a woman really makes a decision. She makes only one, and that's when she decides to grab some man. From that point on, a man must do all of the pushing.
All right, Bill. I think that we have answered Mr. Mario Court of Los Angeles. So let's go on to our next question. Now, this comes to us from Springfield, Illinois. It's signed, No Name, Please. No Name, Please writes as follows. My girl is old-fashioned. She insists I ask her father for her hand. Well, now, I'm very bashful, and I've tried to approach him five or six times. But each time, my Adam's apple comes up and chokes me. Oh, don't laugh, you know. The original Adam who choked on an apple, too. But this fellow goes on to say, all I can do is stammer something silly about the weather. So please suggest some simple way for me to ask her father or to help me convince my girl just how silly it is for her to demand this. Now, how can we take care of this for No Name, Please? Madge?
Well, I think it's such an easy solution. Why doesn't he write the father a letter? As a matter of fact, the solution is so easy that I wonder if that young man is as anxious to be pushed into matrimony as he thinks he is.
Yes. Robin, what would you say?
Well, I would advise him that the girl is not being an old-fashioned girl, because as long as she's accepted his proposal, I think he should kind of say, well, to her father, well, you know, can I marry her? I mean, I think the father would kind of appreciate that.
I think the father would be delighted. Yes, Bill.
I think this young man is worrying needlessly. This is an old-fashioned girl, she says, and if he doesn't ask her father very soon, I'm sure that the father will be around to ask him.
Eloise, you were going to add to that?
Oh, well, I was going to say that thing about the letter, because then he could probably get the girl for 3 cents, and even a man couldn't ask for anything cheaper than that.
Well, he says that he thinks this girl is silly to be old-fashioned. I don't at all. I believe it's much better to be old-fashioned on every occasion than to have an old-fashioned on every occasion. Yes, Eloise?
Maybe he doesn't want to ask the father because he's afraid he'll say yes.
I think you and Madge are together on that one. Andre, did you want to join us here?
Yes, I was going way back to Eloise's question about, answer on a 3-cent deal.
Yeah.
I think that if a man pays 3 cents for a gal, he's only getting his money's worth.
I still insist, though, that if you'll just wait, you'll get her without having to spend the 3 cents.
Eloise, will you please strike back at these men?
Why, certainly, if you can get a girl for 3 cents, just think how many men you can get for a postcard, Andre.
Thank you, Eloise. Thank you very much. I would just, in summing this up very briefly for no name, please, I just say, remember, if Papa doesn't like you, you're not marrying Papa. So don't let it throw you, go in there and ask the girl to marry you if you really want to marry her. For 3 cents. And now, here's another letter signed, no name, please. My, our listeners are getting cagey, aren't they? This comes from White Rite, Texas. And this writer has this to say. My husband has moody spells when he will not speak to me for weeks at a time. And most of the time, I don't know what the trouble is. When I ask him what the trouble is, all I get is a grunt as a reply. Girls, how would you go about breaking him of his moody spells right from the very start? Is it really as unpleasant as it makes me feel? Because, believe me, it makes me feel very unhappy. I like to be treated like a human being. You can hardly blame the poor woman. Glenda, what would you say?
Well, if she only wants him to speak to her, why doesn't she go out and buy a few dresses and hats, a little bit of wardrobe, and when he gets those bills, he's bound to talk to her one way or another.
Or let out a very big grunt.
She yes, only Bill. Wants him to speak to her, Glenda. Remember that.
Well, I think she'd get plenty of dialogue, you know.
Yes, Robin?
Well, he's not moody. If he's that way for 2 weeks running, I'd say he's chronically ill-tempered. And if I were her, I'd just put him right on the mat.
Well, I, as a matter of fact, I think that's right. This fellow has a very even disposition, just bull mad all the time, you know. Yes, Mad?
Well, I think she ought to find out the cause of his moodiness. Maybe he's sick, and maybe he has financial worries, and maybe he's a genius.
Yes, but she says that she tries to find out, and that he won't speak to her and tell her what it is. Andre?
There's a very simple answer to the whole thing. He just hasn't got a chance to say anything.
Andre, you're just being bitter. Yes, Eloise.
I don't think she has a problem. I think that she's very lucky. Even if he's moody, imagine having a man around all the time that keeps quiet. I mean, it's wonderful. I bet all the women will be writing letters to her that write into us asking how to keep their husband silent, asking her how she gets him in those moods.
Yes, I think that's pretty obvious how she does it.
How?
Yes, Bill, we'll say how, but next time you must blow the horn if you want to speak. That's the only thing we ask of the man on this program. It's little enough, but we feel that's all he can absorb, you know. What did you want to say, Bill?
Oh, this is just a defensive mechanism this man employs. He stays quiet because he doesn't have a chance to speak.
You think that would do it? Well, now, I'd like to just sum this up very briefly for No Name, Please of Texas. Sometimes, of course, when you ask a man what's more wrong, rather, the more grunts you get for your trouble, the more you ask, and it's a vicious circle. I would suggest ignoring him and leave him to his own monotonous company, and maybe he'll snap out of it. I hope that that will be the right solution. Do I have any response from the girls on that? Robin?
Well, I disagree, Paul.
You do? Go ahead.
Yes, because if I were the wife, I would just blow my top right in front of him. I'd tell him exactly what I thought of him, you know, and and find out why he was so moody.
Well, I know, Robin, but apparently she's done that. You see, this woman really has a problem. It must be horrible to live day in and day out with a man that just won't speak and will mope around the house. Andre, you're a man, aren't you? Tell us what you think.
As a well-married man, I think the answer is very simple again. Obviously, there's something wrong with the woman, not with the man. There's something that drives him to this mood of being taciturn. And it's obviously the woman herself. If she were nice and charming and had all the attributes of a good wife, he would not be moody and in such a monotonous frame of mind all the time. With these few words, we leave Bombay Gateway to peace.
Well,
all right, with all those few words...
I must put in the fact that you keep mentioning the word monotony. The monotony here is that he's just tired of this one woman.
And I'm sure the woman by now is very tired of this question. So let's go on to our next letter. This comes from Miss Esther DeRosa of New York City. And here's what Mr. Rosa has to say, girls. When my boyfriend calls on me, he doesn't bring flowers and candy. Oh, no. He brings oranges and grapes and apples and pears because they're good for me. Oh, yes. To top it off, last time he brought a dozen eggs. Insisted that I start drinking eggnogs to build me up. Now, I don't want to hurt him. But when I see him coming down the street with an armful of goodies instead of a handful of flowers, well, my blood pressure goes up. Please advise a tactful method of changing his gift ideas. Yes, Glenda?
Well, I don't think they're gifts at all. I think the girl is being fooled there. I think the boy probably just likes to eat, and she has a very comfortable porch, and he can bring his food over and sit there and eat it.
Maybe he owns a grocery store.
Let me put you gals right now.
Yes.
This man is obviously a returned G.I. He's been overseas, and he's become accustomed to winning female favors with produce. He has learned what a candy bar will do.
Yes. Bill, I just want to ask you, didn't you just return from a trip overseas?
Yes, I am.
Yes, well, then
experience.
I know you speak from first-hand information. Yes, Madge.
Well, I'd like to ask Mr. Huey, if he's learned this young man what a candy bar will do, what has he in mind when he brings her a dozen eggs?
Well, I know what I had in mind when I brought a dozen eggs back to London.
And I'm sure that this young man has the same idea in mind, Bill. Yes, Eloise.
Well, I'd just like to say that he's back home now, Mr. Hugh, and he's going to have to change his ways. I think that she should tell him that she's allergic to fruits and vegetables, but that gardenias keep up your health as
well
as your morale.
I'm not so sure about that. If the strikes keep up, I think a pound of butter may become very potent, even here in the United States.
Eloise has an answer for you, Bill.
Yes, I don't think it will ever become that potent. There are still too many men around, and I would certainly advise her not to marry this character, because if she does on their first anniversary, he's definitely the type who will give her a small kiss and a large floor mop.
On the other hand, Eloise, you can't eat an orchid corsage either, you know. This fellow may have something. Now, here is another letter from Mount Pulaski, Illinois. Also, no name, please. My goodness, these listeners must have lots of relatives listening in, you know. Don't want their names mentioned? Okay, we won't mention the name, but here is the letter. I just got married to a Southern girl. Oh, she's crazy about Southern food, Southern climate, in fact, the South in general. Well, now, I'm not any too fond of the South or Southern dishes, except her. I've been in the service for the past 5 years, and now I would like to live near my relatives and stay here in the North, where I have found a good job. My little honey child is trying her best to make me settle down South. What should I do? This gal should have married Senator Claghorn. Yes, Madge?
Well, he says he's found a good job in the North, and I think that the job where he can earn the best living should be the deciding factor, not it shouldn't be a struggle between shortening bread and New England clam chowder.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, This gal should really be happier. Husband has a good job. Yes, Bill?
Well, I'm a Southerner myself, so I'll just say that if this young man will stay down south for a few more weeks, he'll probably find a few more dishes that'll keep him there.
I think if this young lady is listening in, I think Bill changed her mind right now about going back to the South. Yes, Robin.
Well, of course, Mr. Huey, I love the South myself. I think that a wife should go where her husband has the best job and not where she wants to go to because the climate agrees with her or because she happens to like the South.
Oh, certainly, Robin.
I don't know why she'd want to come up here where not even the waiters can speak English.
Bill, once again, you will have to blow the horn. Or I will personally come and hit you over the head with it. Yes, each time. Yes, Glenda?
Well, it seems to me that Robin and Madge are both right, and that if the boy has a job up north, that's the place the girl should come to and live with him without any trouble about it or any questions. But then, on the other hand, he should give a little, too. And if she agrees to come north with him, then he ought to begin to like Southern cooking.
Yes, I understand that, but I think if he's got a good job, he's giving more than a little, too. I bet he's giving a lot. I think these Southern gals like mink coats even in hot weather. Eloise?
I don't even think the job has anything to do with it. If you've got a man, hang on to him. And after all, she's got a northern man, and we see what the southern men are like, Mr. Huey.
There, Mr. Huey. There. Aren't you sorry that Adam lost a rib?
Eloise shouldn't judge southern men just by appearances, however.
Well, I think you're cute.
All right. Well, now, let's sort of sum this up. I think the consensus of opinion on our board of experts is to explain to Honeychild that good jobs don't grow on trees, not even in the beautiful South. So if this fellow can make enough money in the North, why, he'll take her South just for a visit. And I think that should satisfy her. Then she'll have the trip and the husband, too. Sounds like a good deal to me. Now, let's go on to our next letter. This is from Muriel E. Long of Chicago. Muriel has this to say. What do you think of the statement of a well-known writer, quote, marriage depends 90% upon the woman. Its success or failure, its happiness or grief, its glory or shame lie at her door, unquote. I thought marriage was supposed to be a 50-50 proposition. Why should men get away with only 10% of the responsibility? Yes, Madge?
Well, didn't you say that the author says that if marriage is a failure, the fault lies at the woman's door?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think according to the kind of marriage that author has in mind, where the woman gives 90%, he wants the woman to be lying at the door. He wants her to be a doormat, and then she wouldn't have an ideal marriage. But who would it be ideal for?
Well,
the husband.
I don't know, Madge. On the other hand, you must remember that the ratio of brains passed out was 90% to the women and 10% to the men. So, of course, that might explain it. Yes, Robin?
Well, if somebody has to carry 90% of the burden, I don't think they could get along very affably with someone who's carrying just 10%. I think it has to be a 50-50 proposition.
Well, of course, that is the ideal way. Yes, Eloise?
Well, I think that is the ideal way, but it very rarely happens because the men don't seem to be able to hold anything more than 10% of it. They knock themselves out so getting you that after they get you, they're just never able to revive.
Yes, Bill. Bill, that was a very weak little blast on that horn. Okay.
I didn't get just what Madge meant about this lying at the door. Women stand at the door and lie at the door as you come in. But if women bear 90%...
If what?
Women have 90% of the responsibility for the success of marriages. I imagine that's the reason why approximately 50% of all GI marriages broke up while the men were overseas.
Well, now, Bill, I think I'd like to explain what I believe Madge means. The woman has met that wolf at the door so many times, you see, that finally he married her and moved in, you see, but she's still just as bad off as she was before.
The trouble is, she keeps meeting other wolves at the door, maybe.
Oh, I don't think so. Yes, Andre?
How can it be 90% responsibility for the woman when the man pays the rent, he buys her clothes, he feeds her, he takes her out? What is there left for her to do? Do a little cooking?
I think Andy has all of his relatives out for yes, Glenda, you wanted to ask.
Well, what Andy. About all that washing and ironing and taking care of these clothes and the children?
Wait a minute. How about the laundries? Never hear of those? Who pays for that?
Well, they sell an awful lot of washers, you know, washing machines. That
now, Glenda,
they do quite a bit of it.
You never did any washing out in Hollywood. Did you really, except on us for the screen?
She certainly did, Andy. She cleaned up in every picture. Now, you know.
Eloise? Well, not only that, but the way the situation is these days, he's probably paying all the bills with her salary.
Well, I tell you, Bill, I think we better give the men a chance here. So what have you on your mind in regard to these questions?
Well, I've got a few questions here I'd like to ask the girls. And don't tell me I have to pick the pulse stopper first, because I've already picked the question about the old-fashioned girl and the bashful boy who was waiting, trying to figure out a way to ask her father.
Oh,
I think that's
yes.
the best one.
All right, that's fine. We have it, no name, please, here on the letter, but we do know the name, and we will send that writer, in addition to the $5 in victory stamps. He will receive a $25 victory bond as a bonus, and $5 in victory stamps will go out to all other senders of questions used on tonight's program. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the man strikes back. Okay, Bill?
All right. You women all seem to have the idea that all men owe their success to women. If this is true, how do you account for bachelors' successes? My, such answers. Madge?
Well, what makes you think, Mr. Huey, that just because he's a bachelor, he hasn't got a woman advising him?
Eloise.
Obviously, bachelors have women, like mothers and sisters and sweethearts and everything like that. They have to have women to be a success, because where else would they get their ideas from?
Oh, bachelors may have women, but I'm talking about wives.
Well,
Andre.
The reason a bachelor takes advice from women is the reason he's a bachelor. You know what I mean?
All right, another one. Now that we have women in business and in competition with men, why is it that when a woman pulls a shady deal or some underhanded trick, it's considered smart and smooth? But let a man pull the exact same thing, and it becomes dirty, mean, and contemptible. And most of the time, a man has to do it in self-defense against these smart women. Now, why do you have that difference? Glenda.
Well, men never seem to admit that women are quite as clever as they are when it comes to putting over a business deal. So that if they do, if a woman does pull something particularly brilliant, they insist that it must be underhanded or crooked, or she could never have gotten away with it.
And you don't think it will? Robin.
Well, Bill, I don't think that men give women credit for being good businesswomen, and they always think when a deal goes across, it's underhanded. But I don't think there's any excuse for a man or woman doing an underhanded thing.
That's right. You're from the South, aren't you, child?
Oh, honey.
Eloise.
Well, they don't pull shady deals, but even if they did, where did they learn how to do it? After all, the men were the ones that were in business first. But
Mads.
Well, I just wanted to say that you men have been cutting each other's throats in business for so many centuries that I don't know why you should cry uncle when a woman draws a little blood.
The next question. I've always been puzzled about some of our primitive customs. Take marriage, for instance. A girl chases a man until she finally wears him down and they get married. After the ceremony, the guests always brush away a tear while wishing the bride happiness, and the groom gets nothing but congratulations, as though he was the one who had just put over the big deal. Here she's hooked someone to pay the bills for the rest of her life, and he gets congratulated. I don't understand it. Eloise.
Well, in the first place, you're completely confused and mixed up. It isn't the girl who chases the man. It's the other way around. All the girl does is just be in a convenient spot to be caught. And obviously, why the man gets the congratulations, because when he chooses a girl, he gets a wife who's going to be a cook and a housekeeper, and she can be a dream at the same time. But when all a girl gets is a man, and you can either have a man or nothing, and when you get a man, that's what you get.
Andre.
The reason he gets congratulated is because things might have been worse. I don't know how much worse, but they might have been.
I don't think they have any comeback. Glenda, you want to...
Yes, I think that a man certainly should be congratulated because he's getting someone to do all his work for him. And look at the chance the woman's taking. She's liable to get a man like that moody one who wouldn't talk to his wife for 4 or 5 weeks. That's why people shed tears and offer the bride happiness, wish her happiness.
All right, Madge?
Well, sure, I was going to say that Glenda's quite right. They shed tears because they know what an awful awakening the poor girl has in store for her. And they congratulate the groom because he has put over a very good deal.
Paula.
Well, I think they congratulate the groom because they realize he only has that 10% of brains, and they're so happy that 90% have been added to them.
Well, they've really got their necks out now. Andre, do you have something else to say?
I'm afraid to say something.
The next question. Why is it that when a girl is talking to other girls, she's usually very natural and unaffected? But just watch any girl talking to a man and see the difference. She cocks her head a little to the right, flicks her eyelashes, laughs before he pulls the punchline, and dozens of other coy tricks. Why can't you girls be natural around men? Robin.
Oh, that's a prize question, Bill. Men always say that, and every time I come to the breakfast table in the morning with no makeup on, my father just looks at me and says, "Oh, dying Camille." So I'm natural. I'm perfectly natural. You can't win. Men love you to be affected. False eyelashes and all.
Yes, Madge.
Well, when the girl laughs before the man pulls the punchline, Mr. Huey, that's because she wants to laugh, and if she waits till he pulls the punchline, she's not going to. You know what most men's jokes are like.
I'm sorry.
And as for the makeup.
Sorry, hands down, girls. That's all for tonight. But it's been lots of fun having you with us, Bill. And we want to thank you, Glenda Farrell, for being our special guest. We hope that you'll join us again real soon. And, folks, I'd like to say, for the girls and myself, that we really appreciate all of your wonderful letters. And we're delighted to know that we have helped some with your romantic problems. It's been fun. So keep the letters coming. And don't forget to listen in again next week. Until then, this is Paula Stone saying so long, friends.
Before I give you the lineup for next week, I'd like to invite each and every one of you listening in to write us a letter tonight. The success of this program depends upon your letters. We want you to send us your problems, comments, and suggestions. For every question used on this program, the sender will receive $5 in Victory Savings Stamps. If your question is chosen as the pulse stopper by our male guest, you will receive a $25 victory bond as a bonus. All letters become the property of Leave It to the Girls, and the decision of our editorial board is final. Address your letters to Leave It to the Girls, care of the Mutual Broadcasting System, New York 18, New York. And don't forget to join us again next week with Paula Stone, Madge Evans, Robin Chandler, Eloise McElhone, and our Girl of the Week will be the lovely songstress and musical comedy star, Jane Pickens. And defending the men of America will be the well-known commentator and announcer, Ben Grauer. Leave It to the Girls is a Martha Roundtree production. Andre Baruch speaking. Your country needs nurses. 40,000 of them. That means that there are 40,000 young women in this country who have a chance to enter nursing, one of the most highly paid professions for women. If you are a high school graduate between the ages of 17 and 35, you may get all the information you need from the director of nurses at the hospital nearest your home. hospitals are crowded. In every 2 out of 3 hospitals throughout the country, patients are suffering because of the shortage of nurses. You are desperately needed. Enroll now as a student nurse. Don't miss this opportunity to enter a highly paid, highly skilled profession. Nursing is a job with a future. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Jonathan Trimble, Esquire, the new dramatic series starring Donald Crisp, will follow this transcription.